Morning, today's daf in Erchin is daf Zayin. We are on the bottom of Avam and Bezin, a Gemara's continuing discussion of the Mishnah regarding people who have Erchin, people who do not have Erchin. So Erchin, of course, is an assessment. We assess how much a person is valued at when using the Erchin instrument. So the assessment is based on two simple factors, gender and age. That's it. So with those two factors, and only those two factors taken into consideration, so one can easily imagine that people have erchin even though they might not have the best quality of life. It doesn't matter. We really tested the limits of who has erchin in the Mishnah. The Mishnah talked about a ghostis and yotzei liharik. So these two categories of people are ghostis, somebody who's in the throes of death. So not just somebody who's sick, but somebody who is deathly ill, and in fact, really at the last stages of life. Yotzei liharik. Someone who's going to be executed by Beis Din. Beis Din already convened a court. Beis Din already came up with a conviction. And now it's just a simple question of taking him out to be executed. So these are people now whose life is going to be terminated in the very near future. So do they have an erech? Now, they don't have a damim. They don't have a value, a market value. On the market value, neither of these people would fetch any kind of money as a result of the fact that they are going to die imminently. So they don't have a damim. And that the Mishnah says very clearly. And no one argues that point. But what they do, however, have is that they have an erech or they do not have an erech. Well, that's the question. And the Mishnah somewhat deliberates this point. The Tanakhama, the Mishnah says that a ghostis and yotzei lahareg, lo nidar velo nerech, they don't have a neder, they don't have an erechin. So they don't have damim, they don't have a value, that's nidar. And erechin, so the Mishnah says they too do not have an erechin as well. Now Rabbi Chanina in the Mishnah, Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya, omer nerech mimnesha dam of kitzuvim. So he says that they do have erechin. Now, as the Gemara itself clarified, and we did the Gemara yesterday, I'm just recapping, the Gemara clarified that in terms of damim, so there is no, open debate over here. Meaning, we all agree that they don't have damim. Even in terms of erechin, so we can break up the Mishnah. The Mishnah talks about two different types of people, ghostis and yotzei liharig, and there too we can break it up. So ghostis, according to everybody, does not have an erech as well. Why? So the Gemara explained, because they are hamadav aracha. Because part of the erechin assessment is based on the fact that he could stand. The ghostis cannot stand, and so therefore there's no hamada, there's no aracha, and under those circumstances, everybody agrees. Even Rabbi Chananya ben Akavi agrees that he does not have an erech. The only thing that's open for a discussion is the yotzei laharik, someone who's going to be sent to execution. Someone sent to execution, so the Gemara says that's the machlokus in the Mishnah, whether he has an erech or whether he does not have an erech. Now, it's actually easier to see the opinion of Rabbi Chanina ben Akavia, meaning Rabbi Chanina ben Akavia says he doesn't have an erech. Now, even though he's a das yochid, he's the minority position, but it's actually easier to see his position. Consider, when it comes to an erech, what are the two factors? Age and gender. This person who's about to be executed has got an age and he's got a gender. So one can easily imagine, okay, he has an erechin. And that's exactly the point of Rabbi Chanina ben Akavia. What is the Chachamim's viewpoint? So they have a drasha. And yesterday we ended off, we quoted the drasha. The Gemara quotes the pasuk kol cherem lo yipada, that anyone who is subject to die does not have a redeeming quality, like I said yesterday, like we have in the English language, right? He has no redeeming quality whatsoever. So the Gemara says the same thing with this person. This person does not have a redeeming value, and so therefore, once a person is subject to die, even though it's bidei adam, so that person does not have a redeeming quality.
How come just to use the word kol in that? We don't try to find exceptions to the kol.
The pasuk says kol. Actually, we went in the other direction yesterday.
Yeah, right.
The kol was
very comprehensive. Right?
Yep.
But we don't talk about any exceptions.
Okay. That's a lesson of the Torah. Meaning the exercise that we went through in the beginning of this mesecht, in the beginning of the perek, that had to do with mishnayos and brisos, because the mishnayos and brisos are there to incorporate more, not include everybody, but incorporate more. The pasuk in the Torah, when it says kol is always understood as a ribui. It always includes more. Rabbi Yossi Omer no deru marich. So this is now where we left off. Yesterday we're picking up from yesterday. We are in Vav Amud Beis. We are toward the bottom of the Amud, and the Gemara now describes the following. Tanakama mikamar delo. Now, if you look back in the Mishnah, you'll notice in the Mishnah a little bit of a non sequitur. There seems to be like no conversation taking place in the Mishnah. First, the Mishnah brought down the ghostes and Yossi Laharig, whether they have a damim, whether they have an erchin value. That the Mishnah brought down a machlokas, and then the second half of the Mishnah, it's a short Mishnah, second half of the Mishnah brings down the opinion of Rav Yossi, and Rav Yossi says that, you know, when you're being sent out to be executed, you can make a neder, you can make an erchin pledge, you can be makdish something, if you damage, you're going to be chayev. Okay, that's all good information. But who's he arguing with? Meaning, who's he taking issue with? There is nobody in the Mishnah that's taking a counter position. In the Mishnah, we were just talking about whether they themselves have any kind of value. Damim value, Erchin value, and then Rav Yossi goes on. It's not a total non sequitur, but he's not responding to anything mentioned earlier in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, he's talking simply about whether or not there is a whether they have a value, and he's talking about whether or not they can make a pledge. And of course, they can make a pledge. Meaning, why would you think otherwise? So really, I guess we could put this down as two questions. Question number one: who is he responding to in the Mishnah? Question number two: what's the chiddush in which he's saying? Meaning they're alive and well, although, again, they're going to die imminently. So they want to make pledges. They want to do any kind of transaction. So they could do so. So, Tanakama, mi kamar dolo. So the way the Gemara phrases the question succinctly is, Tanakama doesn't seem to be making any kind of counter-argument. So why is Rav Yossi coming along as if he's now countering a position? So, the Gemara acknowledges that. On the first statements that Rav Yossi makes, they are non-debatable points, and they're pasha. So keep pligi beim hizik. So the only point that he's saying, which is open for a debate, is going to be whether or not he does any kind of damages. Tanakama savriim hizik enu chayv b'tashlamim. So according to the Tanakama, if he does damages, he does not have to pay. So really interesting. Meaning, you have our yotzei leharik, someone who's about to be executed, and now on the way to execution. So you can imagine that he's not in right now the best state of mind. He does some damages. According to the Tanakam, he does not have to pay. Rabbi Yossi Savar, Im Hizikai Batashlamim, and Rabbi Yossi says, no, he does have to pay. And what could possibly be the point of contention over here between Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakam? So over here, consider. Now, when we say he's going to have to pay, so it actually is pretty obvious that there's not much more him that's going to be left on this earth, meaning he's about to die. So when we're talking about him having to pay, what we're really discussing is Yerusha, meaning the estate. So obviously any obligation that's occurred upon him is going to have to now be going down to the estate. The estate's going to be obligated to all of his obligations. And so the question becomes the following. So this is what's called the milva al peh. Now, it's true that it's an obligation, but it's an oral obligation. No contract, nobody signed anything, meaning he damaged, he has to pay. So Tanakama suffer milva pay no government of Yerushin, Rabbi Yossi suffer milva pay government of Yerushin. So the Gemara says this is in fact the machlokus. This is going to be the debate that takes place between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi in terms of whether or not you have a non-contracted loan, whether it's government of Yerushin, whether it could be collected from those that inherit. Rava Amar Dukul Amar milva pay no government of Yerushin, and Rava is of the opinion that no, that a milva pay is not collectible from Yerushin. And so over here, the Gemara now provides a second possible explanation of the machlokus between the Tanakam and Rav Yossi, and that's the following. Whether or not an obligation that's documented in the Torah, whether or not that's considered ksuva b'shtar, is that considered something which is contracted? Tanakama savra milva ksuva b'torah lavka ksuva b'shtar damya. So according to the Tanakama, anything that is written in the Torah is not considered as if it's contracted. And Rav Yossi, Savar Kiksuva Bishar Damian, Rav Yossi says, no, it's considered like it's contracted. Okay. And so this is a topic that we've discussed time and again throughout Chas, and that's the following. When I owe you money, so are my possessions now going to be leaned, or are they going to be mortgaged against that obligation? And generally speaking, the distinction we make is whether or not it's contracted or it's not contracted. Okay. And here's what we know. If it's something which is contracted, so that means to say now that because it's contracted, so that means that people know about it. And so since people know about it, there's the expectation that anyone who comes and purchases any one of my assets understands that together with my assets, there's also going to be a mortgage linked with my assets that are going to be mortgaged against my obligations. That's if it's a contracted obligation. On the other hand, if it's not a contracted obligation, if I owe money but it's not on any record, so then people don't know. You can't expect people who coming and buying properties from me know that I have any obligations. It's not been contracted. It's not been documented. And so therefore, you can't say buyer beware, because how is the buyer supposed to know about it? Good. That's the general rule between contracted and uncontracted obligations. Over here, what becomes now the point of contention is the following. Let's say there is an obligation. It's not contracted privately between me and you, but it's contracted in that it's in the Torah. If the Torah says I owe you the money, is that considered now a contracted obligation? And the Gemara says that's exactly the machlokes between the Tanakama and Rav Yossi. Tanakama says, no, I didn't make any kind of private contract between me and you. And Rav Yossi's position is, it wasn't a private contract, but it's written in the Torah. So if it's written in the Torah, it's ki'ilu as if you and I contracted together. And so therefore, something which is kasuv b'Torah, something written in the Torah as an obligation, now automatically becomes a contracted loan. That's the opinion of Rav Yossi. That is our second way of explaining the machlokes between the Tanakam and Rav Yossi. If, in fact, he does damage, does he have to pay? Iga the Masnin La Aha. The Gemara now is going to present basically the same points, but the starting point is going to be a little bit different. Ayotzi Lahareg. So let's say somebody is being taken out to be executed, and here the topic starts off a little bit differently. We're not talking about Hezek, we're talking about Chavala. The subtle difference between Hezek and Chavala: Hezek is when I damage property, Chavala is when I damage your body. Bodily damage, 8th parak of Baba Kama. So this person is about to be executed, so if he does damages to others, he will be obligated. Anyone who does damages to him is going to be exempt. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer Afhu im Chava Bacherim Pater. Now, on the first point about him doing damages to others, Rabbi Shimon Elazar disagrees. If he damages others, bodily damages to others, so then he's going to be exempt. Why? Because here's what we're not going to do. We're basically going, we're taking him out to be executed. Now, remember, we've said this point so many times. When the person's going to be executed in the Torah, so when does execution occur? Right now. Meaning immediately after the conviction, after Beis Din arrives at a vote, so we are not, the deliberation already took place. So there's no more deliberation, meaning the votes occurred, and now we have a decision, and now we go out. There's no death row. There is an appeal process. It's a really short appeal process. The 6th parak of Sanhedrin discusses the appeal process, but we go out immediately. And what we're not going to do is that we're not going to go back and we're not going to take him back to court. Even on a secondary issue, meaning right now he did some bodily damage to somebody else. And now he's obligated on that bodily damage. So we're not going to take him and bring him back. So, and why aren't we going to bring him back? So I'm going to come back to that point in just a moment. But in the meantime, however, let's just continue the Gemara. So Shlo Nitan Lachzaros Amidas Bedin. Michlal Tanakama Savar Nitan Lachzaros Amidas Bedin. Now, what does that mean? That according to the Tanakama, we are going to bring him back? Meaning the Gemara cannot entertain even for a moment that the Tanakama would even argue on that point that we're going to bring him back. Now, why not? So Rashi over here uncovers for us what is really going on behind the Gemara over here. We have a person being executed while on his way out to execution. So then he gets into a little bit of a scuffle. He damages somebody, and now the question becomes, can we bring him back to court in order to try him on the chavala, on the bodily damages that he did to somebody else? The Gemara is assuming right now nobody would say that he would. Why would nobody say that he would? If you take a look at the top Rashi, on the top of the Amun, Zayin Amad Aleph, She'ina Tayach Lachzir Labesin La'amur B'din, Amal She'chava She'in Ma'anin Asadin. So this falls into the category of Inu Adin. Inu Adin basically translates as, it's mental anguish. Meaning a person who's going to be executed, so it's mental anguish. It's torture. It's mental torture to have him just sit there and wait for his execution. And even if it means that somebody else is going to be losing money, it does not matter. Meaning the mental anguish of him just sitting there on waiting to be executed is an overriding principle. And so therefore he's going to be taken out.
What so, if you use the concept of cumulative? I mean, in other words, the process of execution started, so why...
Kimlei is where you do one act, and on that one act, two consequences come from that one act. Here, he already did the crime that is subject to the death penalty. On a totally separate issue, while being taken out, so he gets into a fight with someone.
Yeah, it could be also an incentive for him to get to a fight, so they would take him back again and again.
I hear that. So Amar Rav Yosef, so the Gemara now on the top of Zayin Amad Aleph says, so fine. So we are not going, so nobody's entertaining. The Gemara just now has concluded, nobody's entertaining that we're bringing him back in order to retry him on some monetary case. So Amar Rav Yosef, B'mil V'apel, Gov'em in a Yorshin K'miflagi. So what is open for the discussion, the debate over here is Mil V'apel. Whether or not this is it's an oral obligation. That's agreed to. And whether or not you collect it from the Yorshin. Tanakama Savar Mil V'apel Gov'em in a Yorshin, Rabbi Shimon Elazar Savar Eino Gov'em in a Yorshin. So like we said just an Amud earlier, but now we're saying it again, the only difference over here is that we started with Chaval instead of Hezek. But it's the same basic idea. So it's not a contracted obligation, it's an oral obligation. Can you collect oral obligations from an estate? That's the Machlokas. Rabbi Amar Dukulama Mil V'apel Eino Gov'em in a Yorshin. According to Rabbi, everyone's in agreement that a Mil V'apel cannot be collected from Yorshin. But over here, when it comes to milvak suva b'torah, it's the question is whether or not we view it as a documented obligation, like we explained earlier. And so here we are, basically the same exact debate that we saw earlier. Earlier we talked about Hezek, here we're talking about Chavalah, but the Gemara basically distills it down to the same debate. Meitzvah, the Gemara challenges with the following b'raisa. Chover bor b'rushos rabim. So the case over here is as follows. You are basically digging a hole in a public, in a public fairway, on a public road. So we have words to describe such an individual. Okay, I'll reserve those words. I'll leave out descriptions of this person now who's digging a hole right in the middle of a public road. But right now, let's just deal with the case. So a chofer bor b'rushos rabim v'nafa alav shor, and an ox goes and falls now into the pit, the hargo, and kills the person who's digging the hole. Okay, so
poetic justice.
Poetic justice. So putter. So the owner of the shore now is going to be putter, is going to be exempt for these kinds of damages, more than just damages. Velo odel she'im meis hashor yorshebalav or chayav l'shalim demei shor lebalav. And it goes even further, meaning because consider, really when you think about it, it makes perfect sense. In other words, consider now that let's say damage occurred to the shore as the shore now falls in. So that means now that those of the estate of our ditch digger are going to be obligated to pay the owner of the shore. And I know it's right. It's
I'm
in perfect agreement. It makes sense. You know,
the shore during the Shuta,
the shore is entitled to be in the Rishus HaRabim. That's why it's called the Rishus HaRabim. It's Rishus HaRabim. Rishus HaRabim it's a public thoroughfare. Everyone has the right to be there. So it makes perfect sense, and at the same time, it's like really insult to injury, more than injury. It's insult to death. So Amara, okay. Let's assume that the pit was big enough, was deep enough in order to create that kind of damage. Okay, so Amara Bila, Amara Rav Bisha, Amara Bidin. Oh, I'm sorry, before we get on to the Gemara, so really what's implicit in this Gemara, meaning the case in and of itself already is a little bit complicated, but what the Gemara is really bothered by is the following. What do we see over here? Who's paying out this obligation? So the estate is paying out the obligation, meaning the guy died. So the guy's not paying it out. The estate's paying out the obligation. Now, we just said that whether or not an estate is obligated to pay this kind of obligation is subject to a debate. And we just had two ways of presenting how to understand the machlokas, but it's subject to a debate. The Braisa over here is making a statement that is unqualified. There's nobody arguing in the Braisa. So how can that be? So Amar Abila Amar Av Kishamad Bedin. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you how we're understanding the case over here. The case over here is where the person who was digging the ditch, so he experienced Hamad Abedin. Now, I know that's going to be a little bit difficult because in a moment, as we already saw just a moment earlier, he died in the pit. So it's a little bit hard to understand how there was Hamad Abedin. Okay, we're going to really stretch our imaginations in just a moment in terms of how there could have been Hamad Abedin. But right now, the Gemara is suggesting it. The Gemara says, I can't suggest it. V'ha'har go katani. It says that he died in the pit. How could he have been taken to court? Amar vada barava kisha asa trefa. So the Gemara gives another suggestion. Well, maybe he didn't die immediately in the pit. Maybe he was critically hit while in the pit. And then while taken up, while staggering up, so they said, wait one second, before we go to the hospital, let's first let's first go to the court because, you know, yeah, right, you have, you know, you may have an obligation, and then after the court, we'll go right straight to the emergency room. Okay, perfectly fine. So the Gemara says, "V'amar Rav Nachman Tini Chaga Meis V'Kivro." So the Gemara says, "Yeah, but in a brisa that Chaga presents to us, he died V'Kivro, and they buried him." So the case is, we can give all the ukimtas, but the brisa says clearly that he died while digging the ditch. So V'Hilchas Adiyasi Dani Apuma Debira. So the Gemara says over here, okay, but again, if you want to stretch imaginations, we can envision a scenario in which there could be Hamad Abedin. Admittedly, I think what I'm going to say is obvious. The Gemara is giving a dochik. It's really a forced answer in terms of stretching our imagination, but the Gemara says, but we could do so. Meaning, again, like throughout Shas, like throughout all the Gemaras, what we find is that if the proof is compelling, fine, and if there's any way to push back, so we'll push back. So the Gemara says we could push back. Maybe over here we're talking about a scenario in which there was a court standing there right at the edge of the pit. And so as the animal is landing on top of him, so the basin could be giving a judgment right there and then. Now, again, I know it stretches imagination. The point is that there is some way to push back. Tana Rabban, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, Yotzi leharig mazen alav midam chatasu midam hashama. If, let's say, a person is now being sent to be executed, so what you could do is, let's say he already had a carbon that he needed to bring first, whatever other reason. In other words, he had a carbon he needed to bring. And right now, what stage is the carbon at? Pretty much the last stages of the carbon. They're ready to sprinkle the blood. It was a chatas, it was an asham, whatever, he had a carbon. So the Braisa says, okay, good. So in other words, offer the carbon. Now, keep in mind that after he was executed, so then you can't bring his carbon anymore, because that's a carbon chatas, or an asham. And right, and chatas shemesu ba'alah, once the owner of the chatas dies, so then you can't bring the carbon anymore. So fine, so we are dealing with a case where he is yotzei leharig, he didn't actually die yet, so sprinkle the blood of the carbon, chatas and asham. Sure, it'd be good, but right now he's a little bit occupied.
So no, but
right.
Yeah, exactly. So how could they give the korban while he's in the pit?
He should be, but understandably right now he's unavailable. He's unavailable. But he's alive, though. The point is that he's alive. So, chet ba'os shayin is kakin lo. However, let's say the following. Let's say that while he's being executed, right now he decides, you know, I'm going to die anyway, so now is the best time to do kind of a type of chet. Now, of course, it's not the best time, and it's never the best time. But in other words, fine. So, and again, you know where we're heading now, because this fits into what we learned earlier this morning. Meaning the question now becomes, are we going to delay execution because now he's got a carbon that he needs to bring? Hmm. Okay, and obviously we're talking about a case of shogeg, otherwise there's no carbon to talk about. So my time, I'm Rav Yosef. So Cheba Sosha in is kakin lo. So the Rav Yosef says very clearly, so there's no zikika, we don't deal with the carbon at this point in time. And I'm Rav Yosef Bnei Shein Ma'anis Dino. So here the Gemara says a beferish. Right? Earlier we needed Rashi, here the Gemara says a beferish. This is Inu Adin, because it's mental anguish. Once you are in a position where you're going to be delaying the execution, even if it's for a good reason, meaning previously we were talking about settling obligations that he owes. Here we're talking about bringing a carbon. So there's a good reasons in which we should delay the execution. The Gemara says, no, we do not delay the execution. Amalei Abayi Achi Afilu Reisha Nami. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, then what about the sprinkling of the blood, which earlier we said that you can do? So the Gemara says, yeah, but I see the difference. So that we're talking about where the only thing left to be done is sprinkle the blood. There's literally nothing else to be done. There's no delay. So the Gemara says, Aval Ein Zivchu Zavuch Mai. So the Gemara says, okay, so in the case where he had a carbon already prepared, so you're telling me now that if that's going to result in the delay, then we shouldn't do it. Why didn't the Braisa make that point? That would have been a sharper point to make. So lo. So ad tani chet ba'o so shayin is kakon lo livlog v'lisna b'didda b'medvar mamon shayah zevach zevuch ba'o so shah. Aval ein zevach zevuch lo. So the Gemara says, let the Braisa make the sharper point, which would have been, if there is no time delay in offering his carbon, i.e. the carbon's already shechted, the blood's already been collected, and the only thing left is just to sprinkle, then good, sprinkle. And if there is things that we need to do with the carbon, meaning not even, he didn't even sin. He sinned already. He already set aside the carbon, but now the offering of the carbon would represent the delay, so then don't bring the carbon. So why wouldn't the Braisa make that point? That's a sharper point to make. So Hachinami Kamer, the Gemara says, okay, we'll read that into the Braisa. That's what the Braisa meant. Ba'med v'ar mamon she'ar zevach zevuch ba'o sosha, v'ayin zevach zevuch na'ase k'misha chata ba'o sosha, v'ayin is kakin lo. That's how we'll read the Braisa. Anytime the bringing of his carbon represents a delay, so then it cannot bring the carbon because that would be a delay of his execution that you cannot do.
In terms of his death, is that even if he's been persecuted, would it be a kapara for his chatot?
The assumption is yes.
So he doesn't have to bring another carbon.
But if he already set aside the carbon now stands to be brought, so
and
he should bring
it. In the case that he wants to do another
he's gonna have kapara. It's a little bit tricky, though, by the way, because the only way he's going to have to bring another carbon is only if he sins b'shogeg, and so he has to be unaware of the fact that it's us, or it's a little...
More complicated.
Yeah, it's more complicated. Okay, we are up to the final mission of the first parak of the Masechta. And to say the least, it's going to get interesting. Aisha Shayatza Laharig. So let's say a woman is being taken out to be executed. We know, of course, that men and women are subject to the Yisurim of the Torah and the same punishments as well and capital punishments as well. So there's no difference. There are some subtle differences in terms of method of execution. See the sixth parak of Sanhedrin for some discussion on that. But otherwise, right, they are both subject to the execution. So the Mishnah tells us that a woman is about to be executed and there's going to be drama involved. She's pregnant. So this woman now is pregnant. And so what do you do in terms of her expecting baby? Ein mamtin lo ad she teled. So, very relevant to what we've been discussing so far this morning. So, and there's no delay. And we do not wait until the baby's born. However, if she starts now delivering, so now if she is on the mashber, she's on the birthing stool, so then we do postpone in order for the birth of the baby, and then you go through with the execution. A woman is executed so you can get benefit from her hair. That is really difficult to understand because their hair is part of her body. Her body is asr b'hana. The body of anyone who's dead is asr b'hana. And the hair, which is considered part and parcel of the body, is also asr b'hana. So right now, at face value, the Mishnah is really difficult to understand. But I'm going to read the Mishnah Kipshuto, and obviously the Gemara is going to address this point later on. A woman who is put to death, so you are allowed to benefit from her hair. But an animal who is put to death, animal also gets an execution if the animal killed. So the animal's hair is asr b'hana. Okay, that statement is easy to understand. The woman and her hair is very difficult to understand. And so what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to try to make sense of that. We will do so in just a couple minutes from now.
Okay. Why are you not doing C-section and getting the baby out?
We're gonna discuss pshita gufahi. So the Gemara right now opens up the discussion with that's obvious. Now I know that's when the Gemara normally says it's obvious. Like to us, it's obvious. Meaning, of course, over here, what the Gemara is now suggesting is obvious is okay, she's pregnant, but in other words, she was convicted for a capital crime. She's going to be executed. Okay, so she's pregnant, but she was convicted of a capital crime. We're not going to delay. The Gemara thinks it's obvious. So the Gemara says, well, here's what I might have thought. The Gemara now presents a really strong havamina. Look, what do we know regarding the unborn fetus of a that's redundant. What do we know regarding the fetus of a woman in terms of financial property? Who does it belong to? So we know that it belongs to the husband, right? The pasuk in the Torah in Parshas Mishpatim, right? Numerous gemaras that talk about the idea that if somebody causes that loss of fetus, pasuk in the Torah. So if somebody causes the loss of fetus, so the husband's going to get compensated. So in terms of if we're going to attach financial possession to this fetus, who does it belong to? It belongs to the husband. It doesn't belong to her. So now the Gemara is going to make a very strong argument, which is the fetus is not hers. So therefore, you can't just simply terminate the fetus. It's not hers financially. So the Gemara says, so the Chiddush now is that, no, in other words, that argument is not going to delay the execution. The Gemara says, okay, but the argument is actually excellent. So why isn't that argument going to delay the execution? So Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Kro, Mesu Gam Shnehem, Larabos Es Havlad. So the pasuk says that Mesu Gam Shnehem, that they're both going to die. This is talking about Niyuf, it's talking about adultery, and they're both going to die. And so we have a ribui in the pasuk, right? Those of you who have been with us long enough, you already know where the ribui is. So you have a ribui in the pasuk. So that comes to tell me that despite the fact that we have just constructed a really good argument in terms of why the execution should be delayed, the Torah says otherwise in this case. Where's the ribui? Coming from the word gam. Meaning shnehem means the adulterer and the adulteress. So they're both going to be put to death. And the gam is coming to include even the fetus as well. So the Gemara says, yeah, but there's an opinion that we have to take into consideration. Don't we already need the drasha to tell me that execution only occurs with adultery only when they are both subject to execution? Meaning if one is subject to execution, the other one's not. Let's say the other one's simply not yet of age, not yet a bar onshin. So under those circumstances, we would not execute the other one. And don't we need the drasha for that? So ki kamar begam. So the Gemara says that's true, but that's learned from the word shnehem. We're darshaning from the word gam. Gam is coming to tell me that even if she is not alone, i.e. she has a fetus developing inside of her, gam shnehem. They are both going to be put to death, meaning even the fetus as well. Yashva la mashber. Now, when she sits on the birthing stool, so that we're going to delay the execution. My time came to akar gufach rinahu. So the Gemara says, because now that the birthing stool is, now that she's sitting on the birthing stool, it's as if the baby now is emerging. The Gemara describes it very succinctly. Gufa achrinahu. So now it says it's a separate body, it's a separate entity, and so therefore we have to take that into consideration. Okay, there is this Gemara, obviously, is the beginning of a discussion regarding Torah's view on abortion. This is not the time or place to have that discussion, and quite frankly, I'm not the best person to have this kind of discussion. There are people in our community who know much more about this than I. I'll send you to Rabbi Shabtai, who I would say is probably one of the experts in the nation on this topic. So anyway, but our Gemara obviously plays into this issue, and the truth of the matter is there's going to be more Gemaras that also lend to the discussion. Obviously, but the starting point for the discussion is coming from our Gemaras. I'm Rav Yehuda Mishmol, Aisha, Yosa, Leharig, Makan, Oso, Keneged, Beis, Hei, Rayon, Kedesh, Yamos, Havla, Tchila. Here we are. The Gemara quotes the name of Shmuel that a woman who's going to be executed, and she is pregnant, but she is not anywhere near delivery, but she's pregnant. So makan oso keneged beis harayon. So what we do is we terminate the fetus before we kill her. Kedesh yamos avla tchila, so that the fetus will die before she does. Kedesh shelo tavoli de nivol, so that at the point of execution, so there will not be nivol ames, there won't be any kind of disgrace that's done to the mace. Now lemeimer dechaya kadma umesa. So bereisha, the Gemara says now under general circumstances. So when you have a pregnant woman dies, who dies first? Does a mother or does the fetus die first under general circumstances? So the Gemara is asking, obviously, from a halachic standpoint, meaning it's halachically important to know who dies first. We're going to see in just a moment it affects the halachas of Yerusha, of estate, and how money gets transferred from one to another. So lemeimer dehi kadma umesa bereisha. So the Gemara says, now you're saying that under normal circumstances, she's going to die first. V'akaimelan devlad mais bereisha. Now the Gemara says, but that's not generally true. Generally speaking, what do we say? We say that the fetus dies first. How do I know that? So we base it on a Mishnah that we learned at the end of Baba Basra. Did not tinuk ben yom anochel manchel, that if I have a infant, but it's important over here that the baby was born. So that means to say now that it's not a fetus, it was not in utero, it was born. 1 day old, so nochel manchel. So what it can do is that it can inherit, meaning now that it's a live entity. So if the mother dies, so it'll inherit its mother's estate. And then even if Rachmanis, the fetus then were subsequently to die, so then it would bequeath the estate onto whoever is next of kin. So the Amr of Sheshes Nocha b'nechseyayim la'anchel la'achim and av. And just to highlight like how this now estate is going to get passed on. So let's say there were brothers from another mother. And let's say now this infant, this 1 day old, was born, mother died immediately after childbirth, so now he inherited his mother's estate, and then, right, we know that the children inherit their mother's estate, in fact, an entire institution in the Ksuva is written for this purpose, so that the children all inherit their mother's estate, and then subsequently, if he dies, so then the Yerusha then goes to his paternal brothers, okay? So the point being over here is that he can be a vehicle for the inheriting of a Yerusha and the passing on the Yerusha, but what's critical is that he has to be born. Now, Dafka ben Yom Echad, Aval Uber Lo. Now, but this wouldn't be true by a fetus. Now, it's so interesting. If you would have asked me why it's not true by a fetus, I would have simply said because it's not an entity as of yet. It's not a person. But the Gemara over here presents a different argument. The Hu Mais Bereisha Ve'in HaBen Yorish Isimo Bekevel Anche La'achim Min'av. Because the Gemara says that when it comes to a fetus, our assumption is going to be that vis-a-vis a fetus and its mother, in the event that the mother dies, so what happens, first the fetus dies, then the mother dies. So in other words, it's so interesting, the Gemara does not offer the argument of, well, it's just a fetus, it can't inherit, but rather the Gemara's assumption is, it's not assumption, Gemara's statement is, no, first the fetus dies and then the mother dies. So, working with all these assumptions, what did we just learn together? So clearly what we just learned together is that when it comes to how a fetus dies inside of its mother, it dies before its mother. And so we're trying to understand. A woman who's about to be executed, so to protect the integrity of the mother and her body, so what they're going to do is that makanasaw al ha, they basically terminate the life of the fetus first, and then they kill her in order to prevent nivel hames for her body. But wait one second, the Gemara says, I don't understand. Under normal circumstances, when a woman dies, first the fetus dies, then she dies, so there's not going to be any kind of nivel, presumably. The difference between the cases, you probably already guessed it, but the Gemara is going to spell it out. Hanimila gabi misa. I did a vlad zutra chiyusa, ayla tipa de malchamavasu mechatech lulisimanim. Aval neherga he mesa bereisha. So the Gemara says the distinction is actually pretty simple and pretty straightforward. You see, if we're talking about quote-unquote natural death, so that means that the mother was in seriously ill condition. Or the way the Gemara phrases it, you had the Malcham Avos over there. So as long as the Malcham Avos is over there, so who's now in a more delicate situation? The mother, who is who's an adult woman, so obviously for her it's going to take the Malcham Avos much to kill her, much effort to kill her. But when it comes to the Uber inside, already in a precarious state, in already a delicate situation, so the Malcham Avos to first terminate the fetus and then terminate the mother, Gemara says that is easily explainable. Masha Enkin, what are we talking about over here? We're talking about execution. So we're, right, forgiveness for saying this, but we're taking on the role of the Malcham Avos. So over here, so it's, unless we do so actively, the mother's going to die before the fetus, and if that were to occur, so then there would be a Nivel Hames. Okay. The Gemara says, so the Gemara says, but wait one second. And this, in fact, was the case where a woman died and we found that the fetus inside of her was moving, was involuntary, there was involuntary movement on the part of the fetus even after the mother died. And you're telling me that as a principle, when a mother dies naturally, right, the fetus is going to die before the mother, but we see that there was involuntary movement on the fetus. The Gemara says, yeah, but me did have it as an avatar de mefarchesis. The Gemara says, yeah, but that, I gave the answer away when I described it. That's involuntary movement. That's just nervous, that's nervous movement. That's not life. And so the Gemara says, so that doesn't offend or go against the principle of when a pregnant woman dies, the fetus dies before she does. I'm Rav Nachman, I'm Shmuel, Isha Shiyashva, Lamashma, Mesa, Beshabbos, Mevi'in, Sakin, or Makrinas, Kresa, Rachmanis, a woman who is on the birthing stool and she dies on Shabbos, so will do anything necessary in order to salvage, to rescue the baby, cutting open her stomach, removing the vlad. The Gemara says, Pshita. The Gemara says, now isn't that going to be obvious? So my Ovid, Mechatech Bebasaru. So first of all, the Gemara says, you're trying to express a point that you're allowed to be Mechalel Shabbos. It's not even Chilul Shabbos. Meaning you're cutting flesh. And as Rashi points out over here, it's true that if you make a wound on a live person, so that is a malacha on Shabbos, that's chovel. Chovel on Shabbos is a malacha. Exactly which malacha is it? Does it fall under Shechita? Does it fall under Soveya? Opinions amongst the Rishonim. But right now I could say it succinctly, it is a malacha. But over here, you're cutting a dead body. So that is not a malacha on Shabbos. So don't you want to make the point even stronger? So I'm a rabbi lo nitzricha lahavi sakin derech rishos harabim. So the Gemara says fine. So, but we could still make the point, meaning you're allowed to be mechalel Shabbos, i.e., says the Gemara, you don't have a knife here. You're going to have to carry it through rishos harabim. But if it means that we're going to possibly save the fetus inside, so let's do it. Now, mind you, by the way, if you're following the Gemara well, so you realize that the Gemara is a little bit confusing. The Gemara has just set down as a rule, as a standard rule, that in terms of who dies first, the mother or the fetus, the Gemara says fetus dies before the mother. And so it's a little bit unusual, it's a little bit strange right now, where the Gemara is entertaining the idea that, well, if the mother died on Shabbos and she was Yoshev al HaMashber, so then we'll do whatever it takes in order to save the fetus. Isn't the fetus dead? So probably the simplest answer, the simplest way to explain the Gemara, is that's exactly why we're talking about Yoshev al HaMashber. Meaning, if you go back carefully and you read the Gemara carefully, we're describing a woman who is on the birthing stool. So this rule that the fetus dies before the mother, that could be earlier in pregnancy. But once we're talking about at some stage close to or at delivery, so then we don't make that assumption and we assume that even though the mother's dead, there is a chance that now the baby's alive and we'll do whatever it takes on Shabbos, even though it involves Chilul Shabbos, in order to save the baby. So the Gemara says that's all well and good. As we are now on the top of Zayin Amud Beis, second line down, Amai Kamash Malon. The Gemara says, okay, now what is being taught over here? Like, isn't all this obvious? Everything we just said now, interesting, but obvious. The Misfeka Mechalalin Shabbasa. Okay, so it's a Suffolk Pikuach Nefesh. I may be saving a life, and I'm allowed to be Mechal Shabbos in terms of doing so. Tanin, the Gemara says, but we knew that already. Mishnafal, I love my pulse. So the Gemara here quotes the Gemara in Yuma. So let's say some sort of rubble falls on a person. The person was in a house. The house collapsed. Safek usham, safek inusham. We don't even know if the person's there. Safek chai, safek meis. Maybe the person's there. We don't even know if the person's alive. Safek Kanani, Safek Yisrael. We don't know whether it's a Jew or a non-Jew. So Mefakan Alav Zagal. So what you can do on Shabbos and Yontif, but even more so on Shabbos, is that you can do whatever it takes. You can remove the rubble. Now, it's funny, we can ask the question that we asked momentarily earlier, meaning what Chilul Shabbos are we talking about over here? It's Muksa for sure, but what Chilul Shabbos? The point is still the same point. In other words, do whatever it takes, even though it involves Chilul Shabbos, in order to save the person, even though we can ask compound questions in terms of whether or not we're even doing Pikuach Nefesh. We don't even know if the person's there. We don't know if he's alive. So, Mao Detema Hasam Hu Dahavale Chazak Dechiyusa. The Gemara says, yeah, but I could have made a distinction. In that case over there, we're talking about a person who was once upon a time clearly alive. So he had a cheskas chayim. So now the house caved in. He may be there. He may still be alive. Okay, so we'll do whatever it takes. But over here, aval hacha de lo havelei chazak de chiyusa. But over here, we're talking about an unborn baby. So, and the mother died. And now he does not have a cheskas chayim. He was never alive. He's developing in utero, but he never was alive. So that's the argument that you could have made to make a distinction. So meikare emalo kamash malan. And so you could have made that distinction, and the point of the Gemara is, no, don't make that distinction. Meaning, even in such a scenario, you do whatever chilul Shabbos is necessary in order to save the baby. Haisha sheneriga. So the Gemara goes back to the last line of the Mishnah now as we are finishing up the Mishnah, and finishing up the first parak of the Masechta. A Mishnah over here deals with a scenario in which a woman is put to death, she's executed, and the Mishnah says something which is amazing. Amazing, the Gemara is going to comment on it right now. And that is that you can get benefit from her hair. That's amazing. Meaning amazing, incredible, and hard to imagine that it's correct. V'amai, the Gemara is questioning. Isurei hanan inhu. It's part of her body, and human remains is asur b'hana. And anything which is connected to the body is asur b'hana. Now we learned this based on drashas. The Gemara over here doesn't go through the drashas. But elsewhere we learn it based on a series of Jashas, Gzera Shavas, taking us all the way to Egla Rufa. Anyway, not for now, but right now we could say it nice and succinctly. A mace is Asabana, and so is the hair. So what's the Mishnah talking about? So Amar Abba, Amar Stenusari Leviti. So the Gemara says, well, you know, right before she died, she made the following in her, she put the following in her will and testament. She says, I want my hair to go to my daughter. Okay, good. To which the Gemara says, that's really nice that she said that. It's not going to affect the halacha. Ilu amr tenu yadi leviti mi avin ala. Well, let's say she made the statement that I want to give my hand over to my daughter. Yeah, let her take my hand.
Transfer.
So anyway, so the point of the Gemara is it's not going to affect the halacha, meaning a mace is asur b'hana, period. And whatever she says is not going to change that. So amr abe pe'an achra. So the Gemara over here describes, okay, so we're talking about a sheitel. Now, I say sheitel because that's how we think. That's generally speaking how we talk when we say Pei Anachris. If you look at Rashi over here and Rashi's description of it, doesn't seem exactly like a sheitel. Seems like some sort of hair extensions. I'll tell you what, just to keep everything simple, just to keep everything clear in my mind, let's just call it a sheitel. So, Taima da Amar Tenu, ha lo Amar Tenu, gufahi umitzar. So the Gemara says, now it's interesting. So we're assuming that because she dedicated it as something that is going to be taken off of her, so therefore it's not a sarbana. Otherwise stated, if it's something that's attached to her when she died, so then it is going to be a sarbana. And the Gemara says, and this question was posed, meaning let's say you had the hair of Nashim Tzadkanios. Now, righteous women, the hair of righteous women. What are we talking about over here? So the Gemara has thrown us into a brisa that deals with an ir hanidachas. You take a look at Rashi over here. We're talking about the ir hanidachas. Remember, this takes us back to Sanhedrin. What do we know regarding the ir hanidachas? You have a city where the majority of the inhabitants are being Ovid of Odazara. So what happens is that those who are being Ovid of Odazara are going to be executed. Their method of execution is going to be slightly different. Anyway, and all the possessions in the city are going to be collected into the center of the city and burnt. And we're talking about now the hair of women who, then they're called Tzadkaniyos, they're called righteous women, for one very simple reason. They weren't Ovid Avodah Zarah. So, in that context, now they become righteous. Shelo hutchu imahem ma'u v'amar rabba ha'asam b'chelek pe'ah nachrishe kashra ha'tzadek ha'sasara kami ba'ilai ikigufa hivin nitzol o kemamana. And so the question over here is a wonderful question, meaning she is not going to be killed because she was not Ovid Avodah Zarah. Her possessions are going to be taken because she's living in the city of the Irinidachas. What about her sheitel? Is that considered her body? Is that considered her property? And the obvious nafkamina would be, are we going to take that and are we going to burn it? Now, it's a real oddity, but again, if you just think about it, it really does make sense. So what's going to happen is that everyone has to give up their possessions, including their clothing. And so it's really an oddity, but again, logically, it makes sense. So people are going to be walking, the people who are not over to Avodah Zarah are just walking out of there with no clothing. So what about, I'm sure their human dignity and their modesty are going to be protected somehow. But anyway, but the clothing is not going with them. So dechiv es kol shalatik boats. Ama misafka le'i kegufa ilav kegufa. So we're finishing up the Rashi. So you see over here that what is clearly at issue over here is the sheitel. Is that considered part and parcel of her body? Or is that considered just simply her property? Okay, so why not take our discussion and just fit it right into that question right over there? So that's the Gemara's point, and we go back now to the Gemara. So, ki kami baile. We're back in the Gemara now. So the Gemara says, yes, it's true. That's the question. Rav Yosi, Rav Chanina, the Tali Besichta. We're talking about a sheitel that's not currently on her head right now, but it's hanging on the peg. So in other words, it's a sheitel, but she's not currently wearing it. Hacha de mechaber ba. But over here, we're talking about a sheitel that she has woven into her hair. And so that may be a reason why it's different. The cases are different. Time to Amr Tanu. Halo Amr Tanu Gufa Hiu Mitzah. So the Gemara says, so now, as she is dying, if she says very clearly that I want this hair, which is not my hair, but woven into my hair, if I want it to be detached, so then upon death, so then it could be detached. Otherwise, it's considered part and parcel of her body. Kashile the Rav Nachmar Yitzchak Vahadumya de Behema Kitani Mahasam Gufa Avhachana Megufe. So, in our first approach of understanding the Mishnah said that the hair is mutar bahana. Like, literally, it was inexplicable. What do you mean her hair is mutar bahana of a woman who's executed? It's her hair. It's part of her body. Her body's asur bahana, so is her hair. So the first approach of the Gemara is that we're not talking about her hair, we're talking about a sheitel. Okay? With the secondary discussion of what did we learn by Irani Dachas, resolution, etc., etc. But the Gemara says, but we're not talking about her hair. To which the Gemara now is saying, but you know what? If you go back to the Mishnah and you read the Mishnah, I know it seems almost impossible. It seems like we're talking about her hair. Because if you look back at the Mishnah, you'll see the contrast between the hair of a woman and the hair of an animal. Now, by an animal, we are talking obviously about the natural hair. Same thing with a woman as well. So, and the Gemara makes exactly that point. The Gemara says, Kashula Rav Nachmar Yitzchak, Vahadum Yud Behema Katani, Mahasim Gufe Avhachana Megufe. So clearly we're talking about the hair of an animal. We're clearly talking about the hair of a woman. So Alam Rav Nachman Zumi Sasa Osrasa Vizu Gamardina Osrasa. So the Gemara says, well, obviously what we're going to say is now is the following. That in terms of differentiating between an animal and a woman, so what we're going to be differentiating is what is the cause of Isser? Is the death going to be the cause of Isser? Or is the Gamardin going to be the cause of Isser? And the difference now is as follows. That when it comes to an animal, so what is going to be the cause of Isser? So that is going to be caused by the Gemar Din. Take a look at Rashi. Elam Rav Nachman lo lamsara mamash dekash lach Isser ena ininu lo kashya deser hames lo mitzvah bana delo dam leser behema shenerga deisha misasa usrasa veser lav bar misahu. So when it comes to the hair of a woman, it's not the Gemar Din that's causing the Isser, it's her death. Now her death, interesting, says Rashi, it's lav bar misa. You don't kill hair. Out of context, it's a really funny sentence. But in the context, you don't kill hair, meaning, and Rashi explains, she'in asui lishtanos. Because the truth of the matter is that the hair is not going to change. Ava behema gemardina osrasa. But when it comes to an animal, meaning the reality is the same, but the halachic mechanism is different. When it comes to an animal, what's causing the isser? It's not the death, but rather, it's the gemardin. Kedamar b'psachim, Rashi goes through the Gemara b'psachim, so with the drasha. But anyway, so the difference is as follows. So hair doesn't die, so to say. Meaning your hair, and you know this, because you could just take it and cut it, and you're not going to feel a thing. Hair's not going to die. So what creates the isser is going to be different for an animal as opposed to a woman being executed. For an animal, the Gemara din of Beis Din. For a woman, her actual death. And so if she now is going to assign the hair different status before she dies, so she has the right to do so.
Can they cut it before she passes away?
That's a given. Meaning that would have been obvious. The Gemara is making a less obvious point,
right,
which is as long as she assigns it to be cut,
uh-huh.
So then that would be acceptable as well. So ma'asim gufa hafachanami gufa elam rav nachman zumit sasa osrosa vizu gemar dino osrosa tini levi kavasi derav tini levi kavasi derav nachman yitzchak. And so now we're going to have Bryce supporting both of these positions. So we've just basically given two approaches in terms of how to understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that the hair of a woman being executed is not asur ba'anah. Approach number one is we're talking about a peah nachris. Approach number two is that we're talking about the difference between animals and humans in terms of what creates the isur. So the Gemara is going to go over both Bryce, supporting both positions. Tani levi kavasi derav, ha'isha shiyotze la'ag v'am, or tenu sari leviti nosnim, mesa ein nosnim, and mesha ha'mesa asur ba'anah. So if she says, give it to my daughter, but then she dies, it's going to be asur b'hana. Pshita ela shenoye hames asur b'hana. It happens to be that anything which is an accoutrement to the dead is going to be asur b'hana. And by the way, in the Chevra Kedisha, so a lot of questions that come up regarding what is considered noye hames, right? So shetels, both men and women, right? I know slightly uncomfortable, but both men and women, shetels is a question. Dentures is a question, meaning what exactly becomes now falls under this category of the status of noyeh meis. Tanya kavasi de Rav Nachman Yitzchak, and we have a brisa supporting Rav Nachman Yitzchak. Isha shemesa na'anim esara behema shenega asura bahana. And over here, this brisa is supportive of the second approach, that it actually is the actual hair of a woman. And the question simply becomes a question of what is the halachic mechanism which creates the isser? When it comes to a human, so the halachic mechanism is the nisa. And again, to quote the Rashi, a hair is not something which is considered alive, which died. And so therefore the hair does not necessarily undergo a change. It may qualify as noya mace, but it's not halakhically changed. But when it comes to an animal, so what creates the status change? That's the gemar din. The gemar din is going on the entire animal, hair obviously being included. And so therefore that's going to be the difference. Hajjan lacha kol ma'arich, and that's the end of the first parak of the Masechta. Tomorrow morning, Mirza Hashem, we begin the second parak of the Masechta.